I think it shows me, and maybe you can also talk about this, that architecture is the best education to do anything. I think maybe people have one or two genuine good ideas in their lifetime, and then it's their obligation to do something with it. I think I've made over 50 books before I really felt, before I even thought of myself as a graphic designer.
Today I'm speaking with Joost Rotens, a self-taught graphic designer, educator, researcher and professor at the Royal Danish Academy. Joost leads Studio Joost Rotens, where he and his team create books, maps, typefaces, installations and digital environments. We'll talk about his career journey and personal development, and how he balances the demands of teaching, work and personal life to continuously grow and become his own best version. Hello, Joost Rotens. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for having me in your office. Can you describe me a little bit what where we are and how it looks like?
So we're in Amsterdam. We're on the water side of one of the River Ey. And my studio looks over the water. So the space here is quite... We have quite a long space, and it's kind of along the waterside. So, and all the desks here are kind of individual, and that's quite consciously. I think I can feel the whole podcast about why it is what that is. But okay, so there we have desks along the window, and so everyone has kind of side view to the water, which is kind of great, because there's always something happening, something moving there, if only the light or the... it's the same with when you... I like to think while walking, because you're already progressing. And it's the same in here. Even if you're stuck with a project, if you look to the side, something is happening. At least that works for me. I don't know if my staff, maybe they're completely fed up with it. But for me, it works like that. So it's an office space. I'm a graphic designer. I work as a graphic designer, but I have many people who call me and say, "Okay, it's an architect studio." Where you do graphic design.
Oh, really? And why is this?
Why is this? That's my background. I only found out quite late that I want to do graphic design. I first thought that I like architecture, and I still do like architecture, but I like reading about architecture, and I like showing architecture, but maybe not building. And in this space, you asked about the where, but I think the when is also important. We're here on a Wednesday. We are here with the two of us. We are currently five in my studio. We sometimes... eight, it shrinks and expands, and we start the week together in the studio Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday, Thursday, because we have a 4-day work week. Everyone decides where they want to work. That means that usually I'm here on Wednesday with Dimitri Janota, one of my collaborators, and the others. They are so smart to stay at home, but Dimitri this week is working from Switzerland, so it's just me. So that's why we here are the two of us.
I love the view, and I think a lot of people know the view from social media. Mm-hmm. Is there a special reason that you post about this, about the view here in Amsterdam and Copenhagen?
It's where I am. And I started recording them, and then one day I start sharing it unconsciously, and I got quite a good response on them.
Kind of amazing. Yeah.
And I thought, well, maybe because I have this very, my work life is not the most straightforward. But the two places that I currently work in Copenhagen and here in Amsterdam, they have one thing in common. They are both located on the water side. Copenhagen is actually the sea, even. And here it's the River Ey. And so it is actually where I'm at that day, and what my view is, maybe also what my mood is, or what my thoughts, where my thoughts are.
Would you ever leave this place?
It's not the cheapest place, so that would be. I would certainly miss it, but maybe situations force me to look elsewhere.
How is life treating you at the moment?
Good. Yeah, in general, good. Why I'm kind of doubting is that it's the end of the. It's at the beginning of the summer, and it's been a busy period. But especially because the academic year has kind of just came to a close last week. And those are kind of intense weeks.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, in the book production that we're working on, I see a kind of new wave of book projects coming in that needs to be ready for autumn. So I'm in need of break, but I don't see one coming soon.
Okay.
So, but but life is treating me well. Yeah. So now I'm very happy. I'm healthy.
How do you stay healthy?
Not by working so much, not by sleeping so little, and not by traveling so much. I don't know. Maybe it's a bit of luck.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. Because I've worked with you quite intensively in the past years. Mm-hmm. And what I always wondered is, and I wrote this in the last email I sent you, like, how do you do it? And
yeah.
Doing some research, I'm not the only one who asked this.
I also wonder myself.
Yeah.
Maybe not about it now, but maybe in the past. How did I do it back then? But I don't know. Just stubbornness, I think.
Do you have, for instance, systems or habits which, for like an example, you are very good in saying no, or you don't? You have tips for how to sleep well at night.
Well, if you have any tips, I would be very. I'm a very bad sleeper, so
okay.
No, I rarely have more than 4 or 5 hours sleep. So I don't have any. That should come from me for sleep advice. Saying no, occasionally I say no if I don't really, if I really don't see it. But I also feel that the profile that we have as a studio is specific enough that we attract certain kind of people, and it's almost always there's a match or there's something that's of interest to us and to the others. Yeah.
And then it really feels like a team, and you don't need to explain so much maybe what you need, and that speeds up the working process.
Yeah, or there's always something that you find interesting or you want to find out more about a person, or there's something in the project that you think, well, I'm really curious about to find out what that is, or what the topic is, or the format that you're working on, a new typology, new type of book project, or a new type of project. You say, "Oh, I'm curious to see what that is, and if I can do it."
Did you always have this curiosity, or is it something that you developed through the years?
I think I always had it. Maybe I take it more seriously now, in the sense that. I think I feel I'm less rigid now than I was maybe in my 20s. I think it's also as a kind of grow being in educated in the 1990s, a very kind of conceptual time of design and design thinking, you tend to think a lot and to overthink, maybe. Nowadays, I still think a lot. But there's also some kind of intuition maybe there. Okay, or maybe not intuition, not the right, but just making things and see what happens and then think about it.
Oh, okay. Because a lot of people that I spoke to, also for the podcast, including myself, a lot of things are coming from intuition. But you say it's more doing tests.
Intuition. I think intuition has a kind of a bad reputation. Maybe if I'm from design schools, teaching in design schools, I sometimes have the experience that a student doesn't really know how to explain how they end up here. See, that's more intuition, and that's kind of. But as I think intuition is, if you say intuition is a kind of process where you. you just start doing things, start scribbling, start making, and then based on that you start analyzing and then conceptualizing it. Yeah. Then I think that works for me as well. Yeah.
Yeah, because what I try to do also with this podcast is not per se find the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
No.
So, for instance, Tom Dorstein said, "I'm working in a brand agency. I'm partner in a director of strategy, but I don't read books about strategy. I don't have a background or education whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Gut feeling, intuition, asking a lot, feeling a lot." And I like this answer from you as well, that you say it's just try, test, analyze, and such.
Oh, but I do read a lot.
I read a lot.
It's not only about my field, but also other field. And I think it's actually essential. I don't think in that sense, and I don't want to kind of say anything bad about someone and anybody else, but I feel ignorance is not an option. Huh? So I not only trust on myself, I think I want to be of the world and of the moment. So yep. I want to know what's happening and I feel I have an obligation that the things that I make are of the moment and of the world. And they are situated in that world and they need to kind of mm-hmm. act and they need to reflect what's happening right now.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I go straight from the book or the article to the design. Eh? That's a different process. But it's there. It's kind of this continuous marinade of thoughts, of theory, of
mm-hmm.
seeing things that you don't understand that are often the most interesting things that you. That's why I like to see art or dance or other kind of forms that I go there because I don't maybe immediately understand it, but it keeps with me. I keep it with me, and I know for many months later, I continue back. I think answers are so boring, but questions are very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have a lot of questions for you today.
Thank you.
So let's start at the beginning.
Yeah,
you already mentioned that you're an architect by heart.
By training.
Well, let's indeed. Okay. Yeah. And now you call yourself
graphic designer.
At what age did you found out maybe not architecture, maybe it's graphic design?
I think I did the first book ever I made was 27. And I thought, oh, that's good. That's nice. That's what I really would like to do. And then I started to learn myself, teach myself, read about it. And then I think from around 2000, so that was like 29, I have a kind of practice of just focusing almost exclusively on graphic design. Well, now that's a bit later, maybe 1 or 2 years later. But so you see, from the age 30, I'm kind of working as a graphic designer. And from the age of 34, 35, I also call myself a graphic designer. Yeah.
How do you do it? Maybe not for you, but more for people who are listening and say, I'm an architect as well, but I have doubts. How could they, for instance, find out if not A, then maybe B? Do you have tips?
I don't have to have tips. Maybe I tell a bit about my own story because I think there's some certain kind of circumstances that led me to that kind of that insight. And then separately from that, I will maybe address some things that are once you kind of discover that, what you can do or what I did, and maybe that's maybe useful for others to know. So I think it's important to realize that when I studied in the 1990s, where we had this new design tool, the computer, as a kind of this super tool. It's interesting that kind of this super tool that gave access, that's kind of the same tool for many fields. So by learning the computer and acquiring a computer and having a computer around, I did not only have access to a tool that allowed me to make CAD drawings and renderings and 3D, but with the same tool, I could also do, maybe even in a kind of architectural software, I could do a kind of layout of a publication or a poster, or I could try making an illustration. So there were the circumstances there that I, with the tool I had, I already had access to it. So that, you could say the democratization of the design tools. So that was kind of this perfect storm that I was there, that I had this tool, but I also found out that I liked representation of architecture more than actual building. That led to two different types of graduation projects. One of them was a kind of was purely focused on representation, which was interactive, a computer thing, a CD-ROM, very hot at the time. And because it was a new format, not everyone, it was kind of not connected to a discipline yet. It was not that it was kind of belonged to graphic design or spatial design. It was not a new discipline yet, multimedia, that was kind of doing it. So I did different kind of interactive things, animations, installations for exhibitions. And then one day I was asked, I made something for a kind of for an architect in London, and we wanted to publish it because we thought, well, this is kind of quite nice. Maybe more people should know about it. And then we went to a publisher, a book publisher, and he said, well, I cannot publish a CD-ROM. I'm not going to do that. That's kind of, I don't know, but can you not design a book around it as a kind of packaging? So then I took it upon me to translate this interactive CD-ROM thing into a book, which is something I worked on for almost like half a year or maybe more, on this 64-page black and white book. And it really felt good. It felt like a much more natural medium to me than all the interactive stuff I've done before.
You call it homecoming.
Yeah, it felt like it felt more me than the CD-ROMs that I was doing. And I also noticed then when I realized, thinking about it later, the book was finished. Although I was making CD-ROMs, I was not in my spare time watching CD-ROMs or interactive. It was not. But books, however, I was, you could find me in the books everywhere. So I also thought, oh, what, such a stupid dick. You know, that what you've been buying books for your entire life. You've been collecting them. You've been, and you look at these CD-ROMs, you should do this. And so that's why I decided to do books. Okay, so that's kind of my perfect storm of finding out this format that I liked, having the tool to do it. But then how do you go about taking from there? I started doing different things. I started to read things and the really stupid books. So how to do graphic design and how to do typography, because that was really something really mystical for me at the time. And I read them and I reread them. And I already, from reading them, I thought, well, these are, some of them are really stupid. But I kept on, I was a very good client of certain bookstores. I just kept on kind of acquiring all these things, all these books. At the same time, I was starting to do typological research. Maybe one sidestep. If you go to an architecture school outside of Europe, let's say Asia or even the U.S., you see there that they not start from day one start designing. They first start redrawing a Le Corbusier building or a Frank Lloyd Wright building and making models of that. So the design and the profession and the discipline, the kind of the field, are not interconnected. Like I was taught, I think I started on when I studied at Rietveld Academy. Day one, you start designing. And then later on, you find out more about the past and the field and the history. So what I thought, well, that's interesting. maybe I don't have teachers with me physically present, but I have this kind of shelves full of books here. So maybe they are my teachers, the books. So I started to pick out books that I liked, and then I started to try to understand, and that became, first it became like measuring and just getting a sense for proportion, then scanning the pages and trying to recreate them in Quark Express at the time, just to get a sense of proportion. And so it was about looking, measuring, recreating, making that I taught myself. One part of graphic design, which was this this kind of intuition, developing this intuition for the page. So that's my tip, girls and boys, to just copy.
When did you feel confident enough after exploring?
That took a long time. That took, I think it a really long time. I think I've made over 50 books before I really felt, before I even thought of myself as a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'm a designer. I'm an architect who does books. I'm a book designer, but a graphic designer. That took maybe 5, 6, 7 years in. The nice thing is that at the time it was a curse. Now it feels like a blessing. I would never got a diploma for being a graphic designer. I never graduated from a graphic design department, so I never was kind of a graphic designer.
Gave that a lot of freedom.
It gave a lot of stress at first, but now I think, well, I can keep on studying. I'm still studying. I'm still looking at things, and it can be really stupid things. It could be things like page numbers. How does this one designer deal with page numbers? But it could also be stupid. It could also be about the white space. Or this
stupid.
No, it's not stupid, but it's also not important. So nothing is really important, but it's a detail, but in a process, it can be the most important thing in the world at that moment.
Because I can imagine that people listening are like, he calls it stupid, but
I don't know about that, but yeah.
I think it does. It's also all over the internet. It's about winning awards. It's some quotes also that they call you expert, give you.
Yeah.
No, that's so. That's my question, because I know you a little bit, and for me it's a big contradiction of you giving such praise and how you accept it. Yeah. How do you deal with compliments and criticism?
Well, design awards are It's nice. It's nice if people like what you do, and there's a kind of connection, and it's great, actually. It's always nice. It's flattering, and it's...
He still receives awards if someone...
Yeah, and for me, the first time receiving a book design award, that I felt really insecure there. I felt, okay, I'm well be kind of discovered as this imposter who's doing books. Mm. I'm not trained as one. But also, when I won more awards or bigger awards or international awards,
even
say, that felt okay. That gave me a bit of confidence. Okay, maybe I can now call myself a graphic designer.
Even before you called yourself a graphic design.
Yeah, that really. And I think because I won in this international mm-hmm. book design, and then when I won it once, I thought, okay, well, this is kind of an accident. Huh? But then I won it twice.
Yes,
the second gold medal there, and I had this image in mind of the second plane crashing into the Twin Towers.
Oh, wow!
One plane is a freak accident.
Yeah.
Two planes is kind of deliberate.
Yeah.
So I thought the other way around. So maybe they're not wrong, mm-hmm. or maybe I'm not wrong in pursuing this kind of.
What happened afterwards, after realizing this?
Nothing. I just continued with the new project. Yeah, so yeah. No, you should not make it too important.
Okay. Well, yeah, you started about the Twin Towers.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
felt quite big.
Yeah. Well, they will. Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yes, and I also feel very kind of course, very disrespectful to comparing it. But this is the image I had in mind of this second plane crashing into the Twin Tower. Yeah.
What are you most proud of so far?
I'm most proud of that people come back. Commissioners, publishers, authors. Yeah, that's kind of nice that they come back.
Yeah.
Something must have been good enough for them to pick up the phone again. Mm. Yeah.
Do you ever reach out for feedback to ask why?
No, what was the point? But they tell it. If they... Yeah, so I think so especially in a kind of Dutch context, people being brutally honest, they will tell you what they think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Education is quite important for you.
Yeah.
Why?
Education in the sense of being a teacher.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm from a family of teachers. Both my parents are teachers. Most of my aunts and uncles and grandparents have been teachers. I don't know. It's what we do. It's what it's really. It is no kind of experience so satisfying as seeing someone develop and learn, and that's really fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so. That's one reason. It's kind of great experience. It's also a kind of a non-competitive kind of safe space. If you be in education, so with the contact with your colleagues. It's great to talk to other designers without being in a kind of a context where you are each other's mm-hmm. competitors,
yeah, yeah.
at least. And it's also great to talk about this, about the field that I'm interested in and I'm passionate about, and seeing people all discover it and also push it. And I really feel that the field, design field, is kind of being reinvented at the design schools, at the academies. So what's not to like?
What is the biggest comparison and the biggest difference between Eindhoven and Copenhagen?
And I think you mean the Design Academy Eindhoven,
yeah.
and the Royal Danish Academy that I'm now teaching. Well, there's also Eindhoven and Copenhagen. There's also two differences.
Yes,
there's the fact that. Eindhoven, I was there for 20 years. So I was there for 20 years. I was there. Eindhoven is a Design Academy. Eindhoven is a product design school, I would say primarily, in it kind of its main focus. I was invited there by Gijs Bakker to teach at the bachelor's. Then I joined him to the master's, and then I started my own department there a few years later. And I've been head of that department for 11 years. But it's still it's a product design school in that kind of the measure and that's kind of the standard on what everything is kind of measured or presented or so graphic design, book design, information design is that not kind of the natural kind of output of that school.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very interesting school. It's a very good group of students, very international, very working with the urgencies of today. So that really kept you at your toes as a kind of as a tutor. In Copenhagen, it's different. Copenhagen is a fantastic city. It's really great to be there, and it's great to be surrounded by beauty in a city there, and then. It's the Royal Danish Academy is a school for architecture, design, and conservation. So it's a bigger school, much bigger than DAE. It's a campus, and I'm part of the Institute of Visual Design. It's a university structure, so there's kind of different levels of education, bachelor, master, PhD. Research is there. Eindhoven was just bachelor, master. So this focus on research, this focus just kind of being part of a kind of broader kind of context in terms of disciplines that you're also part of with architects and urbanists that you kind of talk. focus on the research aspects I find really interesting. Yeah. And so my role is different. So in Eindhoven, I was head of program, and now I'm professor. So I'm in and out.
Different. Yeah.
Oh, it's not. No, but it's well, the name is not the difference. The thing is that I have different roles there. Can I play? I in Copenhagen, I have to. I do kind of teach at all levels, bachelor, master, PhD. But also think about development of the school, development of education. So about designing education, thinking about research, so participating in research. So that's nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot and super interesting. So
yeah.
Would this feel a little bit as homecoming? Seeing that you can develop education, being a teacher, architecture, design.
Well, it's in. I don't know if it's homecoming. Every time I'm there, if I get on my bike and I cycle from the airport to the school, I feel privileged that I'm there. I feel I'm lucky. Not that I'm coming home. I think I can do that. What I'm really interested and passionate about, and I do it with people I really like and I really respect, and I feel respected in return. So that feels like privilege. Coming home from the reference you made earlier was something which was always there, and I just had to kind of formulate it, just to give it a name, and then pursue it. And this is, but it's really great. It really, I think it's a great fit. And then also you have to go for it. If you're there, you just have to try to make the most of it. Try to. Yes, I'm an outsider, not speaking the language. But then, yes, I'm an outsider, so I'm going to use that. I'm going to talk to everyone. Make the most of it.
Yeah. So how do you do it? In 2018, you mentioned that your wife believed you to have 4 full-time jobs at that moment.
Yeah.
How do you manage your work teaching your private life?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I think I'm just thinking about the many answers I can give you, and I just start with something maybe very not modest, but I think I'm really good at doing many things at the same time, and maybe that's the only thing I'm good at. I'm not the kind of very virtuoso designer. But just give me many things, and I do it at the same time, and then I kind of think, I'll reach something, I'll achieve something. I really like the combination, and I really like the space between the things happening. I really like talking about other people's design problems in design school, and then going back to my own design problems. And the questions I ask to my students on Tuesday, I also ask myself on Wednesday when I'm staring at my computer. So I think it's again a very good combination of these two. Then when I started to have a relationship and children later on, I was introduced to this kind of new concept, which is called a weekend and an evening off, which was for me completely new. I was kind of really getting up, putting the computer on, taking a shower, and then continuing until after midnight, and then the same thing next day. When I started having kids, I thought, well, this is great. I now have some distance to my work, and I thought, if I think from the design point of view, I think I became a better designer because I also was some time away from the thing, from the screen. And all those things were kind of boiling on, happening in the back of my mind. And I think as also I'm a better parent because I do these other things.
May I ask how old your children are?
I have 2 girls, 16 and 20. Yeah. I know what you're thinking. And I also think, so it's nice. It's also nice to be the janitor at home and then somewhere else.
No, it is for me, that's so far from my bed show, but it's more like...
It will happen, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering that how you still combine it, because even being... Well, I don't think it's a problem-solver mentality, but keeping everything up, all these topics, and Do you have a special habit for this, for people who are listening and think like, okay, so he says he has a talent for doing a lot of stuff at the same moment. How did you develop this skill, or is it supernatural? And
It's not. Is it supernatural? When I was in my teens, I didn't think I could do a lot of. I had difficulty doing one thing at a time, and I was also not fanatic at all. I was really kind of lazy student. It's only when I started the design school, the Rietveld, when I thought, well, this is really great, and I became a bit more fanatic, and I became a bit more obsessed. So it's not something that I'm carrying with me from a really young age. I think that the reason why I started doing many things at the same time came from uncertainty at one point. So when I was starting as a designer and having a bit of success with certain kind of book type atlases and maps, and realizing that it's a lot of work to put in these things, I thought, well, if I have to do atlases for the rest of my life, I'll be crazy. So I started really actively pursuing to do other projects on the side, to kind of diversify my portfolio, if you say it really in business terms. Mm-hmm. But I tried to do other projects next to the atlases. So I started with the success, with the good response I got, and the kind of that the income that I generated, I started to invest in my studio and expanding and becoming a studio rather than a kind of me an individual with maybe one or two. But then I. The only reason was then to not being typecast as a kind of designer and doing one type of project, doing many different projects at the same time. And that required having a bigger studio. Also because the atlases, when I got in, there is so much work that you need 2-3 people to work on them. That forced me in a different role. That forced me in a role of not working on a kind of page level, but maybe on a book level, more kind of zoomed out version. And I noticed that went quite well enough at least to kind of to continue it. At the same time in the teaching, we're now talking 2006, 2007, 2008, that these things happening. At the same time in my teaching, I was happening seeing in my kind of teaching career or my teaching that I had the opportunity to start this master department. That was, it had some success, and I thought, well, I have to do something, and had some awards, and they are stupid, but I thought, well, maybe I need to do something with them, and I thought, well. They gave me some confidence to write a letter to the school. Say, okay, well, I just a new idea for this new department, which made me from a tutor who's dealing with a class or with a student to someone who's running a department and who has responsibility over 12 tutors and 40 students, something like that. So also there, I was forced to kind of zoom out and take on a kind of on a different level, and that I liked that, and I also liked seeing that. Seeing the whole, the big picture. Also, I got more appreciation for details because I saw how they kind of contributed to the whole. That's what I also talked about, the page numbers. So if you're looking at the whole thing, if you look at a 5,000-page book that you work on for 5 years, then all of a sudden the page numbers can become really important.
Yes. I can recall because during our collaboration, I'm not a designer, especially not graphic design. But we were developing the visual identity for KCAP. And I felt, and especially looking backwards to this period, quite lucky that I had some small masterclasses from you and that you showed me some moments. I know you don't like it.
Okay.
But it lured even me after my 30s, and you keep on learning, how important the details are and how to actually look at the things and then come to a whole. And for instance, that we discussed, what is a good photo? I always remember it. Every photo that I select, it's way better than I did before. Mm. So, yeah,
I think you have to make decisions. That's the thing that can have that. And that's the thing. And otherwise, if you don't, if you are not clear enough, then it will look like non-decisions, and then can look very boring and bland, and that you're not interested.
Mm, absolutely.
So you need to create some tensions, and the only way you can create tension is to take decisions.
Yeah. You described that you when trying to figure out if you're a graphic designer or how to, that you read a lot of books and that they were your mentors. Besides that, did you also had a human being as a mentor, or did you look back and you needed one or not?
I met people along the way that are really, really important. So one of them, two of them, was kind of the 010 publishers who I met quite early on, and I did a lot of projects for them. And they, maybe not so much about design, but more about the book, about readership, and about the relationship between publishing, production, readership, authorship, what authorship is, and then how design kind of fits in that. So that were kind of Peter de Winter and Hans Oldenbarghs that were really important.
Do you know what they saw in you as a person too?
The interesting thing is that they also not have a kind of background. They're not kind of trained as publishers. They're kind of trained as an architect and a kind of urban designer in Delft. And they started then become publishers. So I think it shows me, and maybe you can also talk about this, that architecture is the best education to do anything, do anything but architecture.
I fully agree.
Yeah. So it's kind of so maybe that's kind of what we had. So I think that they maybe saw that I didn't have maybe the full grasp of the graphics, but I think I understood architecture and the role of the architecture debate and kind of and where it fitted in. Because I had way more experience in that. I had maybe 10 years when I first met them, 10 years of thinking about that part, and only 2 years or 3 years of thinking about books. So that helped, because I think I understood the book, and I understood the architecture book. Or I understood architecture, maybe that's a bit better phrase. And that kind of helped in the conversations. And I also maybe saw that they saw my kind of eagerness. Yeah.
Yeah. So talking about this eagerness, you did a PhD.
Yeah.
Why?
Why?
Well, and let me rephrase it even. That
I can say why, but please rephrase it.
Well, no, more like that. The description and the quotes that I read about why you were handed over some awards for your work is that you're an expert and such, and that a lot of people believe in you. But what I find interesting is that why you then pursue a PhD, because it's not to show that you're an expert in a person in a discipline, because people already call you like this.
No, it's if you want to do a kind of PhD to get praise, then I think there's much easier ways to achieve that. My first child was born in 2003, second in 2008. Around 2005, 2006, the atlases happened and I started to grow. So I got two growing things. I had a kind of growing family at home, and I got a growing studio there. And I was kind of teaching. I did kind of research. I thought, wouldn't it be great if I would have some time for myself? Within that kind of constellation of activities.
I'm doing a PhD as well.
And I thought, I'm going, and that was kind of 2003, where I also met some architects, Neutlingsriedak architects, who had this four-day work week. And I thought, well, that's great. I'm going to organize a four-day work week for my staff so that I have one day on my own. Which, of course, that was not kind of that idea, because it's also family and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I then at least my kind of agenda started to become kind of, had this kind of opportunity space in my agenda to pursue other things. And I called it my research day. And that was up for studying and continuing my graphic design studies and reading although it was not used all the time like that. But then I developed this from 2003, and then around 11 years later, I thought I want to do this kind of research in a kind of context, because if you do research on your own, it's kind of nothing, or it's nothing. I think in a way, kind of doing research is kind of starting a conversation with a field discipline. Yeah, you can start to kind of talk to other people who are also researchers, and you're kind of communicating with them, and there's also the need to publish and to write. So I thought, well, maybe I need to kind of this context of the PhD to from my own individual bubble to kind of to connect to others and to connect to this discipline. Of course, it also played a role that I was in the education level where I was teaching, and also in my work as book designer, I saw that the benefits it had when to have a title as a kind of teacher or designer without a diploma. I thought it would be good to maybe to have a diploma in it or something, and I started pursuing this PhD. At the same time, I think there was also two other things that were there. My brother also did a kind of PhD in medicine. He said it's not difficult doing a PhD. It's just a kind of diploma in persistence. You just have to continue and be stubborn and continue. So I can do that. And I can do stubborn and continue.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, that's great. So it's not difficult. It's just about being stupid and continuing. Then I also, in the book project I did some book editions of PhDs, dissertations. And they also showed me ways of the method of how to do it. That combination of things led to the PhD, which was, you could also say it's my midlife crisis. I could also have bought a Porsche. But now I decided to do a PhD.
Was it a good choice, looking back?
It was definitely a good choice. It brought me something from day one doing it. It was quite tough. And the toughness was that I did it for 5 years, and for 5 years I felt guilty. I felt guilty to my family spending time on this. And also when I started, my kids were 7 and 12. So I was, and it became, of course, I did it on my Friday, then it became Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then it became Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it started to take over my week during those 5 years. So I felt guilty to them that I was doing this, which is unpaid. So I was taking money and time away from the family and what's in it for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would have been my next question.
Yeah. Then also I felt guilty towards my studio because I was doing this and what they can have to wait for me sometimes with answers for projects. And I felt guilty all the time to my research because I was not spending enough time on it, because there was all these other things that I had to do because I had to make a living. I had to had the responsibility to people. I have to feed people at home, and I also have to. The studio also needs kind of. I have the responsibility for incomes of a few people that I have to pay. So that was kind of the difficult part, was the guilty of feeling.
Was it worth it?
I'm not one for looking back too much.
I am.
It was quite tough at times. If I see where I'm now, and also there, I would never have been in Copenhagen without this. I would never have met certain people who are really dear to me, and certain things that I learned. So that's all very valuable. But it came at a price.
What kind of a feeling did you have when the ceremony of the PhD graduation was? Did you actually held the document? Did you?
I'm one of the first in Leiden who did it during Corona. So it was a Zoom meeting. Okay. It was a very flawed Zoom meeting because we could have the lighting was not that good. Although, so I did it here in the studio with my family sitting on the table over there, and I have the rest of the staff were also in the studio. So that was kind of weird. For me, it was okay. For me, a Zoom meeting was a more natural format than being in a kind of black suit, sitting in a kind of 16th century, 15th century building. I thought it would be kind of nice to give this ceremony to your parents or to your family, that they see, okay, that this is this kind of this rite de passage that you can then have. I was more focused on getting it over with. And it's given this whole house kind of that.
And your family? Maybe the same.
Maybe the same, yeah. Yeah.
Well done. Let's do some A or B do or die questions.
Okay.
Amsterdam or Copenhagen?
Copenhagen.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you explain why?
I feel that Amsterdam has changed a lot. It's a difficult one. I think I could not do my studio somewhere else than Amsterdam, because I think the people I have working here, they came for it. They didn't come for me. They come from Amsterdam, and they like being here, living here, and that kind of allowed me to do that.
And Corona, how because they didn't visit you, did it also give you some learnings that maybe on a distance?
It's possible, but it's also, you cannot do that only.
Wow.
No, that's it not. So I think, and also the space, I'm really happy here in Amsterdam. I would not live in a, like to live in another city right now, and also given my family situation with the girls going to university in the school that they're in here. My wife has her own practice here. So I think it's Amsterdam for me for the foreseeable future. But the feeling I have that when I'm in Copenhagen and when I cycle around and I feel lucky to be there and being part of that. And it's a bit quieter than Amsterdam. I think if I would live there, then probably say, oh, it's a bit too quiet for my taste.
Oh, very.
It's too homogeneous. And I also like, you know, the mess and the kind of the outburst that you have in Amsterdam. It's kind of nice to be part of that as well, but it's also nice to be somewhere. So I think right now it's kind of my enthusiasm for Copenhagen is maybe this feeling of having a new girlfriend. So, isn't she fantastic?
If Copenhagen stops in 1 year, would you be okay of just having Amsterdam as the place to be, or would you consider also another place internationally?
Not the place, I think it's the position. I think I like the combination of the being with the feet in the mud of the practice. And the teaching and the reflecting and the investigating, that can happen from different cities. I think I would still pursue then another one. It's also to be honest, a kind of economic necessity. Yeah, so that's not be crazy about this. This is I need this kind of teaching to finance the studio, basically. Kind of So. If Copenhagen would stop, then I would definitely see what happens. And maybe not immediately, but I'm sure something comes along then.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Books or atlases?
Books.
Joost Grotens is the atlas guy, yes or no?
It's something that I'm trying to fight a long time, but I think yes. Yeah,
I read about it.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Looking backwards to move forward, or look downwards to move upwards.
Looking backwards to move forward.
speak your mind or withhold yourself from judgment?
Withhold myself from judgment.
Never design a book again or never teach again?
Never teach again. Difficult one. It's really...
I know. And every guest...
Yeah.
The same. Traditional design tools or cutting-edge digital technology?
I'm very suspicious of the word cutting-edge.
Well, let's leave it up. Digital technology then.
Then I would say I prefer digital then.
Design a timeless piece that is appreciated after your lifetime, or design trendy pieces that bring immediate fame but are soon forgotten?
I would say neither.
I know, you would.
Yeah, I would say neither, but I'm not, and definitely not the second. So I would rather than to make something which that's kind of appreciated later. But yeah, very suspicious of trends.
And why would you?
When I started designing books, you have started making things and you thought, well, this looks really sexy or something like that. And then I went to bookstores and see if I've seen it before. If it's just me that came up, or is something that was hanging out there in the air and that I want to, that I caught it. And I'm always suspicious. I'm aware, but also suspicious of things that are happening right now. Although I think as a designer, you have the obligation to be of the now. Not purely formally only. It also needs to be a kind of connection to content or debates that are kind of happening with it right now.
So education gives you a place where you can see through the questions and the design.
Not only in education, but I think
that's my question. So how for yourself, not being in education, how do you keep up and stay ahead of the curve, maybe, if you like?
I don't know if you can stay ahead of the curve. Or is that kind of... what's the point of that kind of...
Well, it's a little bit about innovation and, for instance, not making something which has done way before, that people are looking at you like, do you actually see how the world is changing? That, for instance, not younger generations search for inspiration like, okay, this is the new way... sort of say, and that peers might say like, oh wow, yeah, we haven't seen this before. Seeing that you mentioned, if I touch upon something, I go to the bookstore to validate.
To check if it's kind of, I'm a bit suspicious of the word innovation. But I'm suspicious of many words, but innovation is one of them. I think also I'm very suspicious of the word creative industries and things like that.
I know. Yeah. But it gives also a lot of people an indication of,
yeah, but it's the thing is, I think that's the power of language and also the problem of language. It's by reframing design or culture as kind of creative industries, we are kind of forced in a kind of capitalist mode of thinking, where innovation and production and all these kind of terms, all these words mm-hmm. are becoming defining models of what success is. And kind of then it's kind of a large print run is success or... So I think we have to be very careful with the words that we choose. I think that's one of the things that my doing the PhD in writing is that you have to be, words are powerful and also are weapons also to you can also fool yourself by using the wrong words. And as that can be something which looks good, can fool yourself. And I don't want to be fooled. We need it. Yeah.
Sometimes it unconsciously happens. How did you develop the skills for looking and thinking about writing and wording?
I think looking was always there. Giving words to it was something that came over time. That's something you have to do if you start collaborating. Because you have to kind of also develop a kind of argumentation why it is that something you want to do. You do that first maybe in teaching, where you say you design something and you say why it is that it is. Or you do it with in commissioned kind of situation, you have to talk, convince a kind of author or a publisher. Later with students, you have to kind of teach them things. Something that comes and it's and of course I have to use this kind of vehicle of you doing it mostly in a language that is not my own. And so the studio is, we are from Switzerland, France, the Netherlands. So at the moment, so we are kind of, so badly spoken English is our kind of, is our lingua franca, kind of our language that we use. So it's all our, not our kind of native language. And we as a kind of studio develop also our own language where we mix words from different languages in to create a kind of the studio language. That's kind of... And the writing is something that you that's really, it was hard for me to develop that because it requires a different concentration and attention. And it's one thing is being good at 27 things at the same time, but doing one thing at a time, writing and taking the reader by the hand and then guiding her through an argument. Well, that's another thing. But the thing is also then doing it more often and finding out that basically I need 3 days to do one good day of writing. Okay, I can do that. It just takes a bit longer. It takes a hell of a time more long.
Mm-hmm.
So I that's why I started to have kind of writing weekends doing the PhD. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And that means... getting up, starting at 8 and then whoop, until 5. And then after 3 days, after the first day was always kind of hell. And it's such a, it feels so stupid.
You're so stupid. And yes, I can
remember. And then the second day, you get one paragraph done. And then the third day, it grows really fluently. And that's okay. Yeah.
Just taking steps forward.
Yeah, slowly.
Have your work permanently featured in the most renowned museum in the world, or have your work integrated into every educational curriculum worldwide?
Both don't appeal to me, but I don't need both of them, so I would say neither. But then if I have to choose of those, if it's a die thing, then I would say then the curriculum kind of thing. I believe in museums. Maybe I'm not believe in design in museums. Maybe not always, but yeah.
Win another prestigious design award, Joost.
Okay.
or mentor a student who wins a major design award.
I think, of course, it's the student that doesn't really, but shouldn't make. I think. There's kind of several design competitions, and I, for instance, I like the. I've been also in the jury of a few, and I like the kind of the book design competition, which is not so much a kind of competition as a selection, where you, as a kind of jury, present a certain number of books that kind of represent what the thinking is of a jury at that moment in time about a certain kind of year, a certain kind of geographic place, maybe it's kind of the Swiss books or Dutch books. I think I like to be part of the, and that I think is kind of, that really brings the fields, it makes the discipline forward. Just to say, okay, this one is the best. Uh-huh. Not that interesting.
Kind of, I know.
Yeah.
I could already imagine what your answers will be.
Yeah.
But I still asked.
Don't ask the question.
Well, it's not per se for you. It's more for people. And also, if you mentioned that you look at the books from a jury point of view, want to bring the medium more forward, do you also see yourself a little bit as a protector of the medium book? Mm-hmm. Especially if we hear so much about AI and students and other people in the profession are questioning now.
It's definitely true that the field is changing and that the tools and technologies like an AI are kind of having a huge impact on the kind of the cultural heritage and the culture of the field, the culture of the field. You'll find as a protector, I think, I feel a kind of obligation as a kind of participant of that kind of inner discipline to also, I feel responsible for my field. I feel responsible for my discipline. And by participating in juries, which are fantastic, it's one of the nicest days of the year to be in a kind of jury, because you can talk for a full day with people about books, what's not to love, and people you respect and people with something interesting to say. But I feel responsible for my discipline, and that's why I want to kind of uphold this kind of culture. And I'm being part of the jury, I feel I do that.
Yeah. So hate it or love it, but next to being a graphic designer and studio owner, you're also in a leadership position. How did you become a leader?
And with leader, you mean?
Well, someone who is teaching their staff, nurturing their talents, finding ways to grow their potential talents.
Yeah.
Did you had mentors or books or gut feeling about being a support to others?
It's not that I think the leadership suggests, the word leadership suggests someone walking in front of the troops.
I'm just trying to find.
Yeah, that's words again. Yes.
No, that's, I get some homework for myself as well after this podcast.
Let me read the dictionary, Bastiaan. We'll help you. Yeah.
So,
but that's okay, but I understand what you mean. So that kind of means that you have the kind of this role or this kind of title, that kind of this responsibility for a group of people.
Yeah, let's put it this way, that a lot of people are owner of a studio or a big company, and there are so many books in the world about leadership and so many social media posts about how to be a good leader or how to be an effective leader. I know that you absolutely don't like the word leader and you don't portray yourself like this, but somehow people get a lot of information from this to excel the people they work with in their company.
Yeah. Well, is that something that came natural, that I had kind of conversation with my parents or peers at the time of how to do that? That's something that, and also when I first had my first intern, I was trying to make sure that they have a very nice internship all the time. Trying to have really nice service, almost like supporting their kind of internship rather than them. Which is, of course, that you should do. It's also your responsibility. If people do an internship, there's kind of quite a kind of, they give some time, and it's kind of not the best paid, or it's very little paid kind of position. So you have a responsibility to them. But doesn't mean that you have to go the other extreme and try to please them. I think listening is important. About giving credit, it's very important. Accommodate their kind of wishes of how to work, when to work, where to work. To be open and transparent. So if we hire a new intern, it's a kind of studio decision, it's not me. I may be there, maybe making a shortlist, filtering it out. Then we have 6, 8, 10 people left, and then we talk about it together. It's about creating a group atmosphere. It's, if I was teaching positions when I was kind of head of the department, it's taking away the kind of the shit and the difficulties and the discussions I had with kind of my leadership about developments, and just that focus on the students and focus on the teaching, to get it away from them. So protecting them, creating a kind of safe space where they're kind of free, where they feel freedom to be as they would like to be. Because that's what I want. I have these people, and they're great, and they're much better at certain things than I am. And what I want is them to be successful at that in the project that we do. And then I maybe have them, my task then is to formulate how I need them, when I need them in that project. And what are the criteria that we're going to use to look at it? And then I should do everything else around it that they feel they're happy enough to do that. And at least I'm sure that they will have bad days, and I'm sure that they not always like me, and they don't have to, I don't have to be their friend. I don't have to be, and I should have kind of they should go to the bar after the work without not inviting me. That's fine. I'm not one of the girls and boys. So that I also see that, but that's also an age thing, and that's also another thing. So and also where I'm in my life. But
would you like to be?
No, not necessarily. That's not. I think I respect them a lot, and I like being around them. And if I don't, then why keep them all? And so I think I'm generally surrounded by people that I really admire and I really respect.
Who's your biggest supporter?
Supporter in what sense?
Everything all together.
So,
and why? I can refer to one person.
Okay. Maybe you should answer.
Oh, I think your wife.
Yeah. She's a critical supporter. She's not a fangirl. Which, of course, that's also one of the things that I found really attractive when I first met. I have my parents are maybe my biggest fans, like uncritical fans, but I don't. What's the point of having uncritical fans so close? Eh? So, I think the family life and my wife and my children and kind of the sanity that they bring, or kind of the next to this, because you can really can go up, you can really lose all sense of perspective. And only worrying about page numbers or about this phone call you got from this kind of stupid client or author or whatever. And that's good to have something completely different. And then having this life next to this, and that sometimes intermingles. And that's kind of great.
What is her background?
She's also a designer,
How much of your work can or do you bring home? How much can you discuss, and how has it changed over the years?
It's not kind of I bring, and I think what the things we discuss is maybe more related to the relationships and the importance and the kind of the tensions in the project. And but not design this design decision. As I say, okay, well, what should I do with this page number thing?
No,
that's not the thing. So just being able to talk about it, that's kind of good.
Go to random.
Do I bring a lot of things home? No, because that's you should also leave them where they are, and that's the try to not carry everything with me all the time. So I live quite close, but in that kind of 5-minute bicycle ride, a lot of things are kind of compartmentalized and kind of put in the back of my head. And
lucky you.
Yeah,
I think not a lot always, of people are jealous.
But I kind of that's kind of my daily routine. Yeah,
5 minutes. Yeah, wow. That will be my question.
Yeah.
But we continue. Do you see yourself as a personal brand? Do you think others see you as a... Because it's called Studio Joost Grotens.
Yeah, that's a stupid name. That's kind of two questions. That is the name question, and that's kind of the brand question.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine that people recognize it as a certain style, as a certain kind of approach to things. And that they kind of recognize it, and that's why also they reach out to collaborate. That I think I've experienced in the past with certain authors who come directly to us for book projects. Is that a brand? A brand is also about maybe selling it. I'm not saying that I'm not selling it. It's not also that I have a kind of anti-branding kind of thing. I have a website, I have an Instagram channel, and I give lectures. I publish about the work. I published, maybe not necessarily about the work, but I... I'm part of the kind of that conversation. A brand is to me almost like a kind of a translation of a kind of attitude and a method into something that's kind of easy to grasp and to maybe package in an attractive way or a kind of appealing way. No, I don't think it's a brand. Is it an approach? Yes, I think so. That's maybe more because I am who I am, and that's what I and that's or maybe then the name thing. I was a bit when I started out and I had people around me who graduated around the same time, and they worked on their own and they started to call their studios or their offices names. That felt to me a bit ridiculous at the time. So you're just you. Why should you do that? And now there are a few very cool names that I would wish that I had something similar. That if you say for instance the Office for Metropolitan Architecture is a great name. It's also an agenda. It's an agenda of what you want to achieve, a certain kind of qualities, certain kind of skills, certain kind of ambition. That's a great name. There are also many bad names because they say nothing or they. At the same time, I never wanted to be pinned down as one thing. And there's also your Atlas guy question, because I would maybe should have named the studio Atlas, but although there's a studio Atlas in Zurich already, graphic design studio. But I don't want to be it's like Robert De Niro called himself character actor kind of thing, or I don't know. I don't want to do one kind of project. I'm really happy that I did project that I never thought about in my life. And people call me and say, okay, well, do you want to do a dictionary? What do you think about the Bible doing that? I like that. So by not having a name that limits me, but kind of, and that being my own name, because that's the only thing I have. Good. It's a very clumsy name. I think it's very also in our kind of maybe the culture that we are in, or kind of it gets all the attention to me. Well, I'm not interested in me. I think it's the studio, so it's that's why I try to now often work with SJG, which is kind of the
and
it's like the code. I was like the code at the back of a car, so that's kind of the number, the code, the kentekenplaat in Dutch, the number plate. And that's who we are. And that is kind of a mix. And I for each project is always SJG/ and then the people who worked on it. So I try to give everyone credits who worked on it remotely, and there's some kind of order in the naming depending on the responsibilities of the within the project. Yeah, so it's a clumsy name, but it kind of I didn't know better.
Well, I can also imagine that it's quite personal, and nowadays still people who graduate start they also call it their studio with their name.
Yeah,
I was just wondering because the social media, for instance, the visual quality is very high, and you see the credits everywhere where wanted or needed, also on the website. What I then don't see so much or not are the faces of the people behind it. Is there a special reason for it?
I always try to not show my portrait.
Yes.
Yeah. I know that you showed it in your kind of the Instagram. Because I don't think it's about me. I want to show people, but maybe not faces. Also, it gets all the attention. If you show a person holding a book, then everyone looks at the face. So I always, when I have, I'm asked to kind of send in a portrait, I always have also some images that are kind of, instead of a portrait, that I think maybe you should consider this. So for a long time, and I also have it, for instance, in my LinkedIn or whatever, it's just a photograph of my desk, my studio, which I'd ask photographer Nico Bick to take. And I thought, well, this is who I am. And I think it says more about me that the chair is standing there, how the table is positioned, everything else which you see, the bookshelf behind it, is more important than the person I am, how I look.
Where does this approach come from? Do you know? Because it's quite general to show face.
Yeah.
Is it also by not wanting to be pinned down or boxed in?
I'm honestly thinking
a rebel.
I don't think it's about me. The project we do is not about me. I think each project is a collaboration between the studio, between the publisher, between the author, between the printer, binder,
maybe
institution, and just to lift out one person only.
Would you change the name of the studio?
Yeah, and I think I also thought about it sometimes, and I thought, well, then maybe I should have done it way earlier, because it feels a bit stupid to do it now still. Yeah, but then I don't know what kind of head, and I could say, well, but what is the kind of the common denominator? Then maybe it's nonfiction. Should we do something like that? But then, okay, we do the Bible. Is that kind of nonfiction? For some people it is. For some people who I think maybe it's fiction. And maybe we should not have that. And I want to do the Bible because I think it's kind of interesting as a book to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, in hindsight, maybe I should have kind of thought of a stupid name. Something meaningless, not pretentious, and then over time it would have become kind of the name that it could have kind of associated with the work of the studio.
Do you have the feeling that you have, and you don't like this, that you have arrived, that you are in a place that you feel very happy about what you have done in the past and what you might do in the future? Are you still developing talents?
I'm content, if that's what you say. I don't think I have arrived. Or at least if I would get the feeling I would arrive, I would punch myself in the face and continue. Yeah. Maybe that's not nice to say, but I don't think they mind. I have some colleagues that are very dear to me, and I really admire their work. But you see, at a certain time, that they're way more talented than I ever am or will be or was. That they start doing less interesting projects. They lost kind of the touch of the time. They didn't get the most interesting kind of projects to do anymore. And I was always quite. That was all for me. Always kind of a scary moment. Scary horizon, and I never wanted to reach, or something that kind of caught up with me. So I wanted to just keep on running and avoid that thing and to keep on doing new things or different things.
Well, this comes back to the question where you asked me, why should I stay ahead of the curve? This is maybe not completely the same, but from a different angle, that you don't fall in this trap being seen like this.
Yeah, maybe already there, but I want the projects to work that I work on to be relevant.
How can you measure that it's relevant?
If I'm interested in it and other people are interested in it, and then I think it's kind of relevant. If it's an urgent issue, and relevant can also be that it's kind of a very, for individual artists who really needs to see this happen and then do it, then that's what I want to work on those kind of projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there are many initiatives, but I always ask myself, do the people who design it know what the impact is? Apart from initiating actually that project, when is it a success, or when did you reach something or someone? When is it... Was it useful? Do you ever think about this, or is it for you like, this is what I like, I got a commission to do, so let's do it and then move forward, especially if you're saying I'm never really looking backwards.
I'm looking backwards, but not... No, I'm looking backwards. I feel I'm aware. Often when a project's done, I try to understand and analyze it and why it is certain things work or not don't work, or what we could we have done better or different, or sorry, can you go back to the question? What kind of, because I now got stuck in this kind of this
last. Well, not a question, that's fine.
No, we can. And I thought it was a relevant one, but I forgot about it.
Let me try to rephrase it. I have to admit that I almost lost it as well, so I'm digging. Because it was more about staying ahead of the curve. Isn't this relevant for you? And that you do look backwards to see if it was useful, impactful, or that it made sense, and that you don't only have a commission, do the project, and then move forward.
I think it's all these things happen at the same time. Of course, you do the commission and you move forward, but it's also the thing is to if you do a project, you should also bring your own agenda to the project for it to become interesting and relevant and meaningful on different levels. I can make a book project because I talk about the book because that's kind of the thing we do most. So if I take book, it's kind of a project that we do, and it just happened to be books most of the time. Of course, I have to kind of follow the wishes of the author who wants to show something, and the wishes of a publisher who wants to landed with a certain readership for a certain kind of price and be successful about it. I also feel that I have the kind of the obligation to also introduce other agendas to a project. And one of them is that kind of is the agenda of the book, or the design field. So I want to make a book of today that functions in today kind of cultural field of design. That's kind of, so I want to make a book that's of the moment of today, that's also something about what's happening out there, what's happening about societal kind of concerns that are kind of happening, how we think about representation of people, how we think about the certain kind of concerns about production and the sustainability and all those kind of things. And I also have my own personal agenda that I bring to a project. Is that what I want to get out of a project? And that can be very stupid and very selfish things, like I want to try out this new typeface because I think it looks really cool. Or I want to, now I've done this a few times, now I want to do this something else. And it can never be... and of course, these kind of agendas need to kind of connect. And so I cannot come there with my typeface or my wish to do a kind of black base map rather than a white base map for it. It should kind of also fit the kind of context of the project and also fit kind of the budgetary kind of restrictions, and it should fit kind of what's happening in the field right now. But if I don't feel this kind of bigger kind of concern that it kind of beyond the project, whether it's my concern, it's a societal concern over a disciplinary, a cultural kind of concern, then that's what's the point of doing it. So I have to bring that.
Would you say your work, most of your books, for instance, have this within them? Making the impact socially, culturally?
Not all of them. Some it's also, in the projects you do, you sometimes have to look. But the first thing I do in a project is to see what's my role. Sometimes your role is quite limited, and you're more like a janitor. You clean up stuff and you organize it. You put it nicely there and you make it done and you make sure it kind of it's done in time, within budget. That's not to say that I'm completely, that's kind of enough for me. I still try things out, but that, yeah. Those are kind of then the that kind of defines my kind of playing field of where I can experiment and try things out. That's not to say that they're kind of less satisfactory, these kind of projects. I don't say they're kind of lesser or better projects.
You always find space or create space for this. Because I can imagine that if younger people have a project and they really have the feeling I'm a janitor,
yeah,
it's also nice to hear from you that you sometimes have these projects, but then still within the project itself, you create some sort of a field where you...
Yeah, but the thing is, there's a certain... A project should kind of fulfill on several levels. There could be maybe... that is the kind of the content or the project that itself that you're happy with, and that you there's maybe the context that you the people that you're working with you find interesting, or there's the payment that kind of is so that could be the project, people, payment, kind of those kind of three kind of, and if you think of those three, then I think at least two of those three should and then you can move on. That means that you can do a project and it's really you work with really nice people together and it's really interesting to work for certain institution. And the payment as well, but maybe the design itself is maybe not the most spectacular. And there are also other projects, yeah. And you aim to always have three, and sometimes a project starts out looking at you can reach all three. And then it's kind of your responsibility also for your studio to make sure that it's not. It doesn't go below two of those three in the end.
So you mentioned that you don't want to be in a situation that you don't grow and that your projects won't be so inspiring. Do you have intentions for the future, these agendas for yourself to search for more of your talent and development of it? What's next?
Yeah, that's a good question. What's next? I realize I speak from a position of privilege. So I never have to do kind of acquisition, and I get phone calls or emails, and then I do the project. So that kind of privileged position is that I never have to think about what's next, because there is always something next, and I have kind of built up also the confidence that there will be something next.
Could this also be a downfall?
Yes, exactly. That's why also I start doing this kind of research practice next to it, and also this reflecting on the field within education next to it, to see what kind of parallel kind of trajectories I could have taken, or I could take, or I could, and can take in the future.
Would you ever, for instance, because you like the naming of OMA, and I can imagine have feelings for their work and contribution, would you, for instance, having Studio Joost Grotens also consider to have more like a think tank, like a research?
The AMO part of OMA, yeah. You mean like well, that's kind of, that's in a way that my research day is my day next to my OMA.
That you do an upgrade of it and make it more physical, touchable, and also maybe finding within in your network contributors to help, or the PhD outcomes, or whatever thing it is that you do, just the medium of the book.
Do you have to make an artificial kind of division between the two? Do you have to name it differently?
Whatever you want, but for me, it's more like there's so much within the studio and you, but also thoughts. And seeing that you do so much education, for me, it feels like there's something in between. If the need for something else would be there,
I think things will happen and they will develop from it and are happening for it. So there's also projects now that we do that are kind of within the studio. It's kind of research project that are happen within the studio because I have some research hours in Copenhagen that I take completely to the studio and we do here. And it's a way to kind of to further and the discussions in here because we do those kind of investigations here and we also they become projects that we publish or exhibit. So in a way, that's kind of already happening there.
I'm just thinking out loud, and this wasn't.
But the thing is, if it would be just me, only me, I'm not so interested in me.
No. For me, I'm because I'm just making this up at the moment. I'm more referring to, for instance, something like the Y Factory from BMAS and TU Delft.
Yeah,
because you're doing the education, but you do it at different institutions that you. I wouldn't say you create it on yourself because it's not you, but it's about the mission you're on together with other peers and collaborators.
Yeah.
Would that be something?
I can definitely, I hope that we can develop the research parts further and that within the studio and also that is a kind of, it becomes a bit more... it's already connected, but then maybe it merges a bit more, and I feel it is happening. At the same time, kind of the other extreme, where I would only make projects that I that come from me, I'm not that interesting. I think not many people are that interesting. I think maybe people have one or two genuine good ideas in their lifetime, and then it's their obligation to do something with it. I think I've done now I designed over 250 books. My ideas are not worth 250 books. Maybe there are two books or five. Let's make those. And but then do in the other 85% or 90% of the time do things for others.
That was Joost Grotens. His journey from architecture to graphic design showed us the value of staying curious and embracing change. Joost reminded us that it's okay to not have all the answers, as long as you keep pushing forward and learning from each challenge. His stories inspire us to find clarity in stepping back, to continuously evolve, and to look beyond our professional achievements for growth. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to click the follow button, rate the podcast, subscribe to the newsletter, and spread the word, so we can continue to grow the Don't Waste Eye podcast. And remember, everyone struggles, and that's okay. But standing still prevents you from growing and reaching your potential. Keep moving forward, because the better you become, the more you'll inspire others. Don't waste your time, don't waste your eye.